This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's time for Dirt and Sprague.
We have a trophy here that we're going to present. It's the World Championship Trophy, and it goes to the world champion, Portland Trailblazers.
With Andy Dirt Johnson.
You're going to go back to throw the ball. Sets up, left throw toward the corner of the end zone. It is intercepted! The Ducks have the ball! Down to the 35, the 40. Kenny Wheaton's going to score! Kenny Wheaton's going to score! 20, that's in!
And Brendan Sprague.
Smith, hands to Simonton. Simonton around the corner.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Lillard, long range three, and it's good! At the buzzer, Damian Lillard, are you kidding me?
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, and of course, YouTube.com. Good morning, YouTube. You can chime in at the Vancouver 4 text line, 503-864-6326. They teach you right before, during, and after the sale. Visit them at VancouverFord.com. Josh Pate will join us at 7:40, so we'll fill the sleeves at 7:40. But we're starting the second hour, one of our dearest friends, one of our longtime friends, ESPN's very own, Heather Dinich. Good morning, Heather. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. I'm terrific. How are you?
We're doing great. We're talking odds and ends, a little NFL, a little college football so far. We're fired up for the big game in Eugene this weekend, and we want to ask and talk about that game with you, but I want to start with college football, James Franklin complaining about the travel. The Big Ten teams are 1-8 when traveling time zones. Teams can lose games now and not be too impacted by playoff appearances. How is Heather Dinich consuming college football any differently? Is it changed at all for you the way this is all unfolding before our very eyes with these new conferences, travel schedules, etc.?
It's only changed in the fact that you really have to retrain your brain if a team loses a second game. Say, okay, hold on a minute. If they can still win their conference championship, they can still get into the college football playoff. I mean, it used to be dire straits because in the four-team CFP, a two-loss team never qualified for the college football playoff. Now, I think it's going to be the norm. And so when you see a two-loss USC, when you see a two-loss Michigan, now you got to play like a national title contender at some point, right, to win your league. But at the same time, everybody just kind of needs to pump the panic button brakes when there's a second loss, and you're going to see it with LSU and Ole Miss this week.
Yeah, the loser of that game, the fan base is definitely going to freak out. One of the more exciting games of the weekend. We know the end all be all, Heather, for the committee is head-to-head matchups. But it's when you throw a Vanderbilt wrinkle into that, how would they handle Georgia and Alabama right now?
Yeah, guys, that's quite the conundrum. I mean, get the Tylenol out, okay? Because this is it's not easy. And there are going to be people in that room who feel like many college football fans are out there who are like, sink 'em, what are you, crazy? You have Alabama at number three? But their committee chair, Ward Manuel, Michigan's athletic director this year, is going to sit at the head of the table, and he'll say, guys, I'm just going to remind you, look at the protocol you have in front of you. One of your tiebreakers is head-to-head results when comparing teams with similar records. That's what you have. So not only do they have similar records in the head-to-head, they have the best win in the country right now, right? They have the best win in the country. Yeah. So how do you weigh that? And as we sit here today, guys, I think they would have a really hard time in that room moving Alabama below Georgia like the AP did.
Where would that, that's we're talking wild. With Heather Dinich of ESPN, where would you watching Vanderbilt, the way the rest of the country, who maybe wasn't tuning into that game and even waited to the second half, Diego Pavia becoming a name we'll always remember in a trivia test at a random bar. What was Heather Denich's read on watching Vanderbilt actually beat Alabama? Like, how stunned were you watching that?
I was shocked. And mind you, this is the time of night where I stop tweeting and I really focus in on writing, because my job at the end of Saturday night is to predict what the committee is going to do with the top 12. And so I have Alabama sinking. And then I'm thinking, and this is all unfolding, and I'm like, exactly what we just talked about. Oh my God, what are they going to do? And the more you look at it, and the more you look at Oregon, your friends out there, and the more you look at Penn State, you say, well, wait a minute, what did they do to move ahead of Georgia?
Right.
Let's start there. What did Penn State and Oregon do to move ahead of Georgia? Now, if you can't answer that question, then guess what? Georgia's still the number five team in the country, or number four, wherever you have them, right? And if that head-to-head works in your mind and you honor that, that's a safety net for Alabama. So you put them ahead of them. And that's what I did, because I think that's what the committee would do.
And I'm sure everybody responded to that rationally when you put out the article and tweeted out your rankings. Everybody's very rational about this sport. I'm sure we all handled that like adults. You mentioned the Oregon game, Heather. I mean, we're just jacked. It's one of, if not the biggest game in the history of Autzen Stadium. Right now in the AP ranking, 2-3. I've kind of viewed this game, and I know, look, we're talking about Alabama losing to Vanderbilt, so who the hell knows what's going to happen in the weeks to come. I almost view this as like an early playoff game. Like, the winner of this game, I have a really hard time seeing losing two more times the rest of the way, considering their schedule. Do you view it that way, that you think the team, whoever wins this game this weekend, you can't say 100%, but is damn near 100% to make the playoff?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, to me, I look at this game as a preview of the Big Ten championship game, with all due respect to Penn State, unless they say otherwise. And I've got Nittany Lions on upset alert in L.A. this week. So, you know, I think that it's possible we could see these teams again, and maybe again a third time in the college football playoff if the seeding works out that way. But this is going to be a tough game for Oregon. It's going to be a tough game for Ohio State. They haven't really been tested yet. Let's be real here with some of the teams that they've played so far. I talked to Dan Lanning earlier this week, and they're not where they want to be yet, obviously. He wants his team to peak in November, as all coaches do. And he does not seem that concerned about the INTs in the red zone from Dylan Gabriel against Michigan State. He thinks they're correctable. He said they will get those fixed. But those are things you obviously can't do against an Ohio State defense. Those guys they'll take advantage of that in a skinny minute. So how much better can they play up front on the offensive line is one of the biggest questions I have. Who can run the ball? Who's more physical? All of those typical things, I think, are going to determine the outcome of this game.
So, Heather, you have an article up at ESPN.com, Week 7 Bubble Watch Predictions, Playoff Matchup, Seeding. You've gone through the whole laundry list of things here for people, and people can find that again at ESPN.com, College Football main page. And maybe I'm misreading this. The 2 seed for you, and this will be actually good news for my co-host, because he hates when people pick his team. He likes to do the whole chip on the shoulder thing. You have Ohio State as the 2 seed. So am I to interpret that as you picking Ohio State to win at Autzen this weekend?
You're very perceptive. Yeah, that's how I'm going with that one. And that's right. And that's also reflective of me projecting Ohio State at number 2 on Saturday night in that committee's top 12. That's how this whole thing works. On Saturday night, here's what the committee's going to do. This is their top 12. And on Tuesday, every Tuesday, it's here's how that translates into what the bracket would look like and why. And I've got Texas winning the SEC, Ohio State the Big Ten, Miami the ACC, and this week BYU winning the Big 12.
Okay. On that Big 12 note, I'm curious to ask you, so the way that it works, correct me if I'm wrong, top 4 seeds go to the byes, go to the 4 highest-ranked conference champions, correct?
That's right.
Okay. Where is the thought in your mind, and is there a thought in your mind, about the Big 12 not getting one of those spots. Just because I know
like
they're
a Boise State was
like a Boise State.
Projection.
If they went out the rest of the way and their only loss is a 3-point loss to Oregon,
and
in which
Heisman,
winner and all that, and maybe the Big 12. I look at the Big 12 and I think you could pick six different teams maybe to win that conference right now, and they're just going to eat each other alive. Is that a thought out there that maybe Boise State, if they went out, the Big 12 eats itself alive, and maybe the champ has three losses, that number four spot ends up going to Boise?
I'm going to take your Big 12 thought and raise you one with the Big 12 and the ACC getting left out, potentially, of the top 12. And then you have Boise State, to your point, getting that first round bye, and you have the ACC and the Big 12 possibly out of there, and not out of the playoff, but out of the committee's top 12. And then you know what that would do? That would bump out the 11th and 12th team in the committee's ranking on selection day. Jeez. In order to make room
for the conference
for the
champ.
ACC. Correct.
Wow. That would be quite a conundrum.
So that could happen. Yep, that could absolutely happen. And to your point, it could just be you could have Boise State at 11, you can have LSU at 12 with three losses, and you can have K-State down there at like 14 as the Big 12 champ with three losses. Well, guess who gets left out? LSU at number 12 gets bumped for the Big 12 champ.
I think, Heather, we've had you on for a few years now, and we always appreciate the time. I think the one thing maybe we slightly disagree, I guess, on the committee stuff, and you're connected to the committee. You get to talk to these people. You get a feel for what they are. They have a resume to show you kind of who they are. The one thing I've been thinking about as we get closer and closer to the playoff is how much the committee is going to take in not only the rankings of these teams, but the potential juicy TV matchup thing. So, like, for example, you have Miami as a 4 seed or 3 seed. You have Oregon against Penn State in the first round of these. Like, I'm thinking the committee, if we're splitting hairs between 9, 10, et cetera, are they going to do an Oregon versus whoever in the first round and the winner goes to Miami? Or conversely, Miami in the first round and the winner of that Miami game, Mario, comes to Eugene. Playing the TV narrative, the juicy matchup narrative, on top of what they do with what these teams are.
I'm going to say no, because having gone through multiple mock selections as a member of the media, it doesn't come into your head the matchups or rematches or possible seeding. What I'm most curious about along the lines of what you're talking about is if when they're doing their top 12, they see their 12th team and know that team's going to get bumped out. That's my question in my head, is does that sway the way they do that? And that's an individual subjective thing, but I sincerely don't think, and I mean this genuinely, that they do that top 12 with any indication of what the seeding is going to look like. Because when you're ranking those top 12 teams, like, you don't know in your head, at least at this point. I got to sit down and I got to write it out. Like I don't know if you guys have seen my Instagram page. I sit down and I write it out on a yellow tablet, so I know what the hell it looks like. Because it's not easy to just sit there and look at the top 12 and be like, oh, this team's going to play that team. It doesn't translate in my brain like that. So when they're doing that, I don't think that's going to come to fruition. But one thing on the seeding, and coaches are going to realize this, if you're the 8-9 seed, you're playing 8 versus 9, the winner of that game plays number one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there are certain little pros and cons that I'm starting to realize as I go through this exercise each week of where you kind of win and where you lose in some of these seeds.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a 12 seed upset the 5 seed and not play the number 1 seed in the second round because you're not reseeding. It's right. Interesting that that's the way that it's going to work out. We've brought up for years, Heather, that we wish that, especially now in this new format, that we wish the rankings would come out sooner. Now, I know these people all have different jobs and they're flying in and they meet and you're there when they're sitting down and when the rankings start officially coming out. Do you think we'll ever get to that point in the sport where this, you know, let's say right now is when the first college football playoff rankings come out, or do you think it'll always stick where the time it's at?
Man, that's a great question. I think just because of interest and entertainment value, like pure entertainment value, it could always move up. It's above my pay grade to answer that question for ESPN TV executives. Right. But I mean, I'm sure they would love to talk about it as soon as possible. I think our Tuesday show starts next week, even without the rankings. But the reality, as I do this every week, is you don't know. And you know, the AP poll, Penn State's the number four team in the country? Really? Come on. You know? So I think you need as much time as you can get to truly get a feel for where these teams are.
Yeah. Brandon Sprague, Heather Dinich, both teaming up to say Penn State sucks. I love that. We'll just run with that narrative.
The synergy is strong on the show this morning.
We'll get you out of here with this one, Heather, because we're against it. We appreciate your time today. It's a hypothetical, but it continues to be reported or talked about, this like super league. There's these former Disney execs and these people with money. They're like, let's make a jumbo super league, and there's billions of dollars in it. I tend to not think there's anything to this because the Greg Sankeys of the world do not want to relinquish their power. Is there any chance this is ever a thing? Or do you think the conference commissioners will always be ahead and railroad these ideas?
Yeah, I'm not sold on it yet. I mean, the key here, and you nailed half of it, is Greg Sankey going along with it. But you also got to get Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti. I'm actually going to Nashville today, where the Big Ten and SEC are meeting tomorrow. It's an important meeting. I'm sure people will be asking a lot of questions about that. But the bottom line is I don't see it happening anytime soon, but never say never, because that's the world we live in right now.
Okay, a follow-up there, because you're going to those meetings, good or bad for college football, for the Big Ten and SEC to say we're better than everybody else, we get the most playoff spots, you guys sort out these couple playoff spots down the road?
You know, everybody wants to see the best college football games. I don't think anyone thinks it's good for college football to cut the group of five out of it, and I don't see that happening because of the TV contract that exists from 2026 through the 6 years of the deal. That's not the way it looks. But there's also a flip side to it. College athletics needs leadership, period. And if Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti want to step into that void and find solutions, I say have at it.
Okay, there we go. Good stuff. Heather Dinich, she's on her way to Nashville right now. Enjoy Broad Street and looking at that famous goalpost in the river. There's a lot to do in Nashville. We'll follow the reporting, and we appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us today, Heather. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys. Enjoy that game out there in Autzen.
Oh, we will. There we go. Heather Dinich, ESPN.
Yeah, this is one of those fun weeks where we love to criticize the committee, and the rankings will come out eventually, and we'll say, how could this team be there? How could that team be there? How could you rank this team there? Everybody sit down and give me your top 10. Do you rank Georgia ahead of Alabama? Alabama just lost to Vanderbilt, but Alabama beat Georgia head-to-head 2 weeks ago.
I think Georgia State is ahead of both of them.
So Georgia State should be ahead of both of them. She's right on Penn State. Hell, my team's in this. Who the hell's Oregon beat? We're undefeated. Who the hell's Ohio State beat? They didn't beat anybody. Well, should Miami be a top six team? They're eking out wins over bad teams. Should BYU be in there? Good luck putting together a top 10 this week, man. That's it's never been harder.
That's why, Dirt, the rankings should be out sooner. I need to know where these people are at.
What do they prioritize?
They're just going to steal the AP and then tell us the AP doesn't matter is what they basically are going to do, and I don't like that. All right, we have a lot to get to. Josh Pate at 7:40. We'll get to some audio of Ryan Day and Chip Kelly, their read on the Ohio State-Oregon game as well. I have a fan conundrum, and I want to talk about it next on The Fan. There's a guy on the internet who everybody's nicknamed Lieutenant Dan because he's got one leg.
Lieutenant Dan, you got magic legs.
He's choosing to stay on his boat. Says, if the water rises, my boat will just be on top of the water. I'm okay.
Seems like sound logic, right?
Don't mind the 150-mile-an-hour winds.
Nah, that's the way science works.
Had a life jacket. He said, hell no. I could swim in circles. He's going to be the old guy from Mount St. Helens.
Like the old guy that didn't get off Mount St. Helens.
I
can't remember that guy's name.
Harry.
Yeah.
I want to say it was Truman. I want to say it was a presidential name.
Yeah. But it was out there at Spirit Lake, I believe.
And he obviously didn't make it. They've only found like an engine from his area from the Mount St. Helens eruption.
Harry Truman. Yeah.
It was Harry Truman.
Harry Truman.
Yeah.
killed by the eruption of Mount St. Helens.
They warned him. He said, hell no, I've been here forever. I'm not going anywhere.
And, I mean, this happened in the last hurricane where the Coast Guard had to go save a guy who tried to ride his boat out into the hurricane, and then it capsized, and they had to freaking fly into a hurricane and
save
this guy. Have you
not seen Perfect Storm, people?
Like, what are we doing, man?
Marco Rubio, a senator in the state of Florida, said, they showed me projections years ago of the worst-case scenario storm-wise that could happen. Said that's exactly what Hurricane Milton is projected to do. People also noted that Marco Rubio voted against funding for FEMA.
That's not good.
We have a lot to get to in the program. Josh Pate's going to join us. I have a bit of a friend conundrum. He has not asked me to throw this on the air, but I'm throwing it on the air.
Throw it away. Let's do it.
Yeah. So my buddy is a diehard Duck fan. He went to Oregon. He loves the Ducks.
Okay? Yes.
It's about the only sports team he truly cares about.
Okay.
His son is 15 going on 16. He's trying to groom him into being a Duck.
Yes.
That's what he's doing. Hey, I met your mom down there. You need to go to Eugene. He's taking him to game day. I asked him what time he's leaving. He said 3:30.
No chance.
I think this is a massive mistake. I said, dude, I'd be leaving at 2 at the latest. Because parking,
yeah.
Do you want to go to game day and not be anywhere near?
No.
Like, do you really want to be in the very back? And
so, where do they do it on campus?
He said they're doing it at the is it an MU?
I don't EMU know. EMU is usually where they do it.
He said that's where they're doing it. I don't know. I'm not familiar with Oregon's campus.
They've moved it around. Because they've been there a number of times. Obviously, they've done it in like 5 different locations. So they've done it in front of the library. They've done it one time by the stadium. They've bounced around where they've done it over the years. Has he ever been to a game day before?
He went, I believe, as a student.
Okay. Because I would ask the question.
He's a little older than us.
The students are camping out all night, aren't they?
I've been to a game. I know you've been to a game day.
They show up.
They came to game day a couple of times when I was there, and it was fun. For a college student, we'd, go basically from partying one night, you wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you get an hour of sleep, and then you walk over to game day and you just booze for like 13 hours. It was glorious.
Yes.
After doing it once, incredibly overrated.
Oh, it's such an overrated experience.
Incredibly. Like, it's like to do it one time, you say you were there, you hold up a sign, the crowd's in there. Yeah! So I get, for his son's sake, like, you want to take your kid there and have him experience that, and they probably watch game day if they're college football fans every weekend, and hey, there's Nick Saban, right? Like, you want to be a part of that?
I think really this game adds
trip.
A little extra juice
a recruiting
to
trip for him to, yeah,
it's
sell him on the campus.
Absolutely a recruiting trip for
I
him.
Just, like, it's one thing if you live in Eugene and I'm waking up at 5 and then walking over to the stadium, and it's like, hey, I'm just up a little bit earlier. It's different. Like, dude,
I told him on Friday.
Say, yeah.
Maybe if you even have a bigger car or something that you can, stretch out in, I would go at midnight.
He does have a big car. He's got one of those extended
park somewhere,
Jeeps.
I would go park get 2 hours of sleep
and nod off for a little bit and then go
walk
in.
Over.
And he's not playing. He's not a varsity football player. So he has nothing Friday. And so I said, you should go down Friday.
If he wants to go watch the varsity game, then I would leave straight from there, go down, find a spot. Not off in the car for a couple
hours.
That's
kind of what I think, too.
Yeah, it's you just stand there.
And by the way, I watched the Cal stuff a little bit. The Cal kid who hit the field goal, he told McAfee that he got there at 11:30.
There were kids, like, breaking down gates the night before.
And maybe I'm misremembering, because I didn't camp out. When I went, I wasn't a student. Or no, I was, but I was, like, almost done with college. I remember getting there, and there were some people, but, like, the most people showing up at like 4, not camping out at 11:30 at night.
I didn't camp. Yeah, the times I went, they went a couple times and I was I never camped out for game day. We'd camp out for tickets occasionally,
sure,
but never to go to game day. We would just wander over at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning and find a spot somewhere to stand. And it's like, I think McAfee has had it, has added to the element of this. Like, he interacts with the crowd in a way that they've never done with the show, and I know a lot of people don't like Pat McAfee. He's been great for that show, in my opinion.
So is Saban.
And so is Saban. And so I think there is that, like, McAfee's going to start chanting something, and he'll get Duck fans all riled up. That's something that didn't used to exist on the show. But just a PSA for anybody going, there's that brief moment, and then you're literally just standing there.
And you kind of hear it on the speakers.
Yeah. They're just doing the normal show. And you're just,
it's a three-hour show.
You're just standing. And then eventually they get back around to talking about the game, and then you get excited. And then Landon will come out, you get excited. And then they make the picks, you get excited. But there's like 90% of that is you're just standing there.
I think most people that have experienced it as a student of any university would all kind of agree here. You want your school to get the game day experience because you get to say you have game day. You should do it once if you haven't. It is one of the more overrated sports things, though, that there is.
Yes, it is.
And you can go into it and say, no, guys, you're wrong. I'm going. It's going to be great. You will walk away and go, one, what do I do now? Because our game's not till 4:30. And two, my legs are tired. And now I'm kind of weirdly hungry, it's but I'm tired. Like, and it's a weird balance if you're not a student consuming alcohol.
It is going to be on Saturday. So what time is that? 6 o'clock in the morning, right?
It starts at 6. Yeah.
6 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it's going to be
40
like
degrees.
49 degrees outside. It's going to be cold. It's going to be dark. Yeah, and at least it's not raining on you, so you got that going for you. If he leaves any later than 2:30, he will be screwed.
I tend to agree with this. 2:30 is leaving at 3 something.
That is the limit of when you could
go. Good luck with parking and walking, and you're going to be late.
Turn around and drive home right afterwards. I like the recruiting pitch, though. It's smart. Kid'll like it, probably. It's a cool thing for kids to do.
Well, he won't admit it, but he really doesn't want his kid to go anywhere else except Oregon.
I don't blame him. I'm already there. I make Teddy play with an Oregon football every day for 30 minutes.
But you've given him the size that may put him at Oregon State. What do you do there? I don't know what to tell you there, buddy. We have a lot more to get into. Josh Pate at 7:40. And Sprague back with more on The Fan.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure?
Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. With memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, online, crunch.com. Josh Pate coming up in a matter of moments. He will be in Eugene this weekend, and we'll talk to him about how he saw last weekend coming, because we had a lot of people tweet us, man, Pate nailed it last weekend.
He nailed it.
So we'll talk to him in a moment. We'll get some NFL news just in a brief second, but before we do that, I want to read a couple thoughts here at the Vancouver Ford text line.
I text my friend. He's not responded. I don't think he appreciated me doing that segment.
Well, look, it's good to flush these things out. We're crowdsourcing solutions here. I see his argument for, like, I was curious if he had ever been. If he had never been, seeing it one time, like, all right, I get that. You want to check it off a list, say I've been. It's also like his kid's probably going to love it.
So he is, I want to say he's 42.
42.
So he would have been.
I don't know if he had a game day at Autzen then.
Yeah, he's in that weird era.
Because when I was a freshman at Oregon,
that was
game day came back. That was 07.
Okay.
Game day came back, and it was their first game. It was like a big deal when they came back. It was like the first Oregon game day in a while.
Sure.
So it hadn't I wanted to say it hadn't happened since like 2002 or something like that, but I might be mistaken.
He might have been there in 02.
And maybe he was there in 02. Spokane Jeff said, I went to the game day when they were at Wazoo, got there after it started. It was so hard to hear the game day crew, and the second I arrived, I got hit by a drunk WSU fan with their flag. Overrated experience.
But I mean, that's the one experience. Like, you were there for the one experience,
and
that
they're probably
was
never going to go
considered
back.
The best game day ever.
Yes.
So, like, you get to say you were there, but yes, overrated.
Somebody said, glad you guys are doing this segment because it's on my list to experience it at least once. On this note, I tell every person, do not ever go to New Year's party ball drop in New York City. Same thing you say, you just stand around. You're cheering when the camera's running. No entertainment unless you're at the stage. We got there at 10 a.m. We were three blocks away from the stage. They don't play the entertainment on screens throughout New York City. Couldn't see a thing.
You can't
ever go, not worth
like
it.
Like the Thamel hits. All these pieces by Tom Rinaldi's of the world. Like, you don't hear him very well.
No.
You don't see him. It's just, unless McAfee's screaming.
He's
or
on
Corso,
his chair, getting you all fired up, and you start cheering along.
And the field goal. Like, those are the only two real experiences. Outside of that, they, like, indicate to tell you to cheer because the camera's going to pan in your section. You should experience it, but also I wouldn't blame you if you never did because it is massively
driving down 2 hours. That's a big move right there. Quick NFL note, by the way, Nico Collins going on our IR for the Texans. So he's going to be sidelined for a minimum of 4 games. Josh Pate, the Nostradamus of college football, evidently, he's going to be in Eugene. He is next on 1080 The Fan.
I think Oregon has a little advantage on the line of scrimmage here. Isn't that interesting? And you got home field, obviously, at your back. And what's the Wilner headline out there? Big Ten teams having to travel two or more time zones is just horrific so far this year. What I'm trying to tell you is, I think Oregon's going to win the game outright.
Oh, he had to do it. He had to do it. I'm trying to go under the radar,
chip
underdog.
On the
nobody's giving us a chance. I'm watching all these national shows. Everybody's
jinx. Is that what you're going with?
No, there's no jinx because this man is Nostradamus. Joining us now is the voice of college football, the commissioner himself. Every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, live on YouTube, 5 o'clock our time. You can check the podcast. Go subscribe to the podcast and the YouTube page at Josh Pate, CFB. It's Josh Pate's college football show. Josh Pate, first off, we will get to your pick of my team last night on the show. I did have to ask, though, like, what was in the water last week? Because we had people texting us and tweeting us all weekend of like, damn, that Josh Pate guy nailed it this week, because it was absolute carnage. So what led you to believe that, and what are tonight's lottery numbers?
Deep inhale, exhale here. I'll tell you what was in the water. Vanderbilt's goalpost in the Cumberland River. That's what was in the water. I want you guys to follow me here. A little brief story. I know our time is limited. So I live downtown Nashville, about a mile or a mile and a half from Vanderbilt Stadium. Well within walking distance, shall we say. I get on a plane. I fly 700 miles to go watch A&M just body bag Missouri. And I'm sitting on the tarmac in Houston about to take off and fly back watching Vanderbilt close out Alabama, which in and of itself is a sentence that it's tough to push out of your mouth, but it happened. We land in Nashville. Nice flight, non-eventful. I get in my car. I live like 10 minutes from the airport. As we're coming back into downtown across the bridge, there is a crew, like a crane crew or something like that, that is pulling the goalpost out of the river. And it was just college football's ultimate slap in the face of, you travel halfway around the world to try and find the biggest event of Saturday, and every now and then it could be right down the road in your backyard. I have never been more exhilarated and humiliated at the same time in all of my years.
Now, Josh, if you would have just decided, I'm going to take it easy this week, you would kind of called Upset City's happening. You certainly, I mean, maybe I'm misremembering. I don't know if you had Vanderbilt beating Alabama straight up, but like calling all the upsets, maybe you just say to yourself, you know what, it might get weird here. I'm going to stay home. I'll take it easy on the mileage reports with CBS and 24/7. I am going to stay here and make it easy on myself. Had you done that, would you have participated? You don't want to be a biased guy, and I don't think you are, but when a field goal is being carried down Broadway to a river, how do you not have the feelings of, I got massive guns, I can help these people, this seems fun once in a lifetime? Would you have wanted to participate?
I think I would have. I mean, judging by my actions in the past, like I was at the 2017 title game when Tua hit the second and 26 pass to Devontae Smith, and it happened in front of me. Now, I grew up in Georgia, actually, so if anything, I had reason to be biased for Georgia. I just jumped into the dog pile because that's what my instinct told me to do. If you go back and watch the ESPN feed, I'm
going to look it up right
there.
Now.
Yeah, I'm just in there with the players. It's the most unprofessional. I don't know. I've done some pretty unprofessional things. But, yeah, you would have absolutely. There would have been local news helicopter footage of me carrying that thing down the Broadway to the goal, to the Cumberland. Now, here's the good part of that. If there's any team in America you want to be accused of having bias for, is Vandy not the biggest safe space homer alert that there is in college football? No one's going to get mad at you for that.
No, that is a great point, and that would have been hilarious to see the biceps carrying the field goal into the
just
river.
Just to be like, is that Josh Pate?
I think that's a circle. That's a Zapruder film. I think that's Josh Pate down there carrying that damn thing.
He was in the box with Taylor Swift. On
he
football,
was. This guy's everywhere, dude. Yeah. We can't even keep tabs on him anymore. I'm still waiting for those lottery numbers tonight. Let's stop burying the lead. You're going to be at Autzen Stadium this weekend, and we're all – I mean, this is one of the biggest games in the history of Autzen. No, you know, number two, number three, whatever the rankings are, first or second top five matchup ever in the history of the stadium. You picked Oregon to win last night. What's behind that, the logic and the thinking of Dan Lanning getting a marquee win under his belt?
Yeah, let's set the record straight here. This is the number one team in the JP poll coming into Autzen Stadium. Mm-hmm. So you're placing the number one team in the country as far as I'm concerned. And also, I don't want to do the whole underdog us against the world thing. I went and picked Oregon last night, and the first thing I did this morning was I clipped it and I texted it to Dan Lanning. Seriously. Because I don't want anybody to be able to sit at a press conference saying no one believed in us. Brian Kelly pulled that on me a couple of weeks ago. They go as a touchdown favorite, by the way. They go edge South Carolina. And he has the audacity to sit in his postgame presser and say, no one picked us to win this game. Like, what are we talking about?
Didn't Georgia try that after one of their titles? Didn't Georgia go like, everybody thought we'd win eight games or something?
Yeah,
everybody. Yeah, no one thought we would, you know, except odds makers and everyone and their mother. So here's my thinking on this. They've both already played Michigan State. I got some pretty good feedback from our Michigan State folks, actually. And they said both really good teams. And it's the line of scrimmage that we thought Oregon got after us more than Ohio State on. Now, whatever that means is whatever it means. I am a believer that, relatively speaking, the offensive line is still the vulnerability of this Ohio State team. It's good. I don't mean it's a trash like Akron coming into Autzen Stadium offensive line, but it's, relatively speaking, their weakness. The thing about Oregon is they've got better depth and athleticism, but they're also more multiple up front, therefore giving you different looks and different pressures and simulated pressures than anyone has to this point, and you're dealing with that level of crowd noise for the first time all year. So things about Ohio State have been perfect. Red zone, perfect. There's just a lot of that that could be a little discombobulated in this environment. And I've also watched Ohio State for a few years now go on the road. You know, I think about the Notre Dame game last year. I think about a couple of other big examples, the Michigan games. And it's not that they can't win. They do win. In fact, they've won most of those games, but it's very close. And I trust Oregon in a close game here, especially having experienced Washington twice last year. I think that was a real attention grabber for that program and for that staff and for that team. And everyone's had this one circled for a while. But this is the game where I think Dylan Gabriel's got to shine. That's going to be a very low margin for error game. I think their offensive line is as healthy as it will have been. I really thought they started to ramp up offensive production against Michigan State. One extra day rest, home field. Big Ten teams have been horrific traveling 2+ time zones so far this year. And therefore, I think Oregon's going to narrowly find a way to win this game.
What did Lanning respond with when you texted him?
I don't know that I can state that on the air, but he liked it. Yeah, he approved of it. Let me put it that way.
Now, and you may not share the message, but like when you say he liked it, we're getting an actual response, not a thumbs up and that's it, carry on with your day response from Dan Lanning, right?
Oh, a lot of exclamation marks on the end of the sentiment. It's the sentiment itself that I don't think is fit for public airwaves.
Okay. I appreciate that. Now, I think the tough thing for me, because you know, you get to the off, you're in the off season, we're going into a year, everybody in this job, we make these dumb predictions that we have to change or pretend we didn't make. I liked Ohio State going into the year just with the experience they had coming back this year. Now, with sample size in front of us, the difficulty I have here, I love Oregon getting 4 to 3.5. The difficult with picking the game, and I think you highlighted this on the show last night, is I don't know how to interpret Oregon's schedule and the way they played, and I also don't know how to do this with Ohio State, because Ohio State's final scores, I think, do not indicate the Ohio State I've watched. I've watched Ohio State Akron. I've watched Ohio State Michigan State. I'm seeing a team kind of sleepwalk their way through first halves and then just be Ohio State in the second half and win by 20. So how hard is this for you as true football bro to say time zone stuff mattering, and then also how do I interpret what these identities are when they've played largely cupcakes going into this game?
Yeah, here the one thing I think that cancels that out is you also know in those games, you go into it if you're an Ohio State offense, if you're Chip Kelly, and you know there are certain things you do not have to show, you don't have to do. It's just, you know, going into this, honestly, maybe from both sides, but especially from the Ohio State side, you know they've had zero incentive to show a lot of things. Like, I don't think they've run the quarterback nearly as much as they're going to in bigger games, designed at least. I don't think they've incorporated the tight end position. I don't think they've incorporated tailbacks in the passing game nearly as much as Chip Kelly will at some point this year. It would figure to start this week. So, yes, the slow start, I've noticed it along with you guys, but it also is indicative of a team that knows it can afford to.
Yeah.
When you've trained your mind to know October 12th, we're going to Austin, and every sentence has ended with, but we got to be better than that against Oregon, but we got to do something different against Oregon. Well, it's not automatic that you get out to a 10-0 lead. It does, percentage-wise, put you in a better position to start fast. But you can say all that. Like, that's how it's supposed to sound. You still got to go do it. You still got to go execute it.
Yeah, it's a good point. Josh Pate is our guest. Josh Pate, CFB on Twitter. Go give him a follow. Josh Pate's College Football Show every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock our time on YouTube. Go subscribe to the channel and subscribe to the podcast as well. He's the best out there. Nailed last week, and he's going to be at Autzen this weekend, so follow the socials as well, where you'll get great behind-the-scenes content. Last one I have for you on this, Josh, is I have been told by the internet that Ryan Day and Dan Lanning can't win a big game, so have you contemplated this being a tie?
That's so wrong. I think it's one of the big talking points of the game because it's so fun for me when I get the the combination of coaches who, quote-unquote, can't do something because one of them has to do it. So then, by utter default of moment, someone gets off the proverbial schneid. I keep using these qualifiers because I think all of this is garbage. And then I'm going to be told if there's a rematch in the Big Ten title game and the one who loses Saturday wins that one, both of them revert back to not being able to do whatever it is they both ended up doing.
Who is the biggest fraud in the top 10 to you right now?
Well, it was Missouri, and we got them out of there. Mm-hmm. I mean, Michigan, I didn't even have them in my top 25 last week, and the AP still had them at 10. I don't know if you guys have realized, but that's no more. Miami's an interesting case study right now. Now, full disclosure, so I can be a hypocrite on live radio, I've got Miami in my top 10 power rating-wise. Mm-hmm. I'm very suspicious of them. My own numbers have them a point and a half above Clemson. I'm not so sure I wouldn't take Clemson if they played today. So I have the constitutional right to disagree with my model, and I may exercise it on Miami right now. Now, here's the follow-up to that. They have the ability to be one of the best teams in the country. They are not playing to that level right now. Another good case study there is Texas A&M up until last week. I had not bailed on A&M. I still had them in the top 15, 17, or whatever range, and it's because I knew they were what I call a click team. A click team is a team that is not playing up to its capability yet but has the upward mobility potential. Then all of a sudden they get their starting quarterback back, and he shines, and they dominate Missouri. And so folks have started to buy into them again. Their ceiling at A&M is top 10 potential. Conversely, the ceiling of maybe an Iowa State or a Kansas State, both of whom have been winning, Iowa State's undefeated, their ceiling from a power rating standpoint is probably 13, 14, 15, somewhere like that. So you're just looking at what teams are capable of. So Miami's capable of doing a lot. They are not playing to that level right now. They can. But that doesn't change the answer to the question you gave me. You said right in this moment. I think Miami may be the answer if you're looking right in this moment.
It's a little off the radar, but I know you follow it. You're a diehard college football fan. You may not talk about it as much as you talk about other teams, but are we going to have a guy from Boise in New York who only plays the first half of games because he might be in my conversation mentally of one of the top five best college football players I've ever watched? What Ashton Jeanty is doing at Boise, where seemingly every play, four guys just bounce off of him and he runs for 60. Your thoughts on what his season has been so far and his chances of actually getting to New York as a Heisman finalist?
I'd be surprised if he's not there. I think to this point in the season, you're nearly halfway through the year. I think a lot of people have baked in the idea that he's one of, you know, four, one of five, however many get there. I think he'll be there. I also think that there are a lot of things that are going to happen for the eventual finalists that haven't happened yet, which is pretty common sense. But I'm thinking about Quinn Ewers having his three or four biggest remaining stages be in front of him. So there's a lot of that to sort out. I think, look, Shador, I don't know, is in the conversation as much as Travis Hunter. Shador Sanders is doing some crazy things right now. You know that he still gets harassed every play. They're still in the 100s in pressure rate allowed. They can't run the ball. Their leading rusher is 80 yards shy of Kansas State's third leading rusher. So they're doing nothing to help him. And he's thrown a total of three picks on the year, and he's top 15 in all the discernible quarterback metrics. Like, he's almost paying a price for being Deion's son, if you can believe that, because folks aren't actually talking about his performance. So that's a really, really roundabout way of saying, yes, Ashton Jeanty will be in New York if I have my way.
Yeah, we had last one I got for you, Josh, is we had an all-time moment on Monday on the Feinbaum Show.
I'm in sports hell.
And I'm just curious to ask you, so I've seen Joe Klatt say that they are a glorified Big 12 team from 2017. I've seen articles written that their coach needs to tuck his shirt in. How are things going? You're down there. How are things going in Tuscaloosa right now?
Not too good. Not too good. I have been a little taken aback. I got to be honest with you. I've been a little taken aback because the same people I listened to essentially place a crown on Kalen DeBoer's head 6 days prior, then ripped it off and threw it in the Cumberland River along with the goalpost 6 days later. And I just have a radical opinion for you guys. Okay, we can edit this out of the replay if we want to. And I may whisper it. Here we go. I kind of think Kalen DeBoer's just the same guy he's always been. And the guy he's been is pretty good. He's pretty good. I think there is a lot of newness. There's a lot of learning, a new program. There's a lot of transition. You're going from Nick Saban to fill in the blank. Whoever that was going to be was going to have a little transition period. It's just that they don't allow for that at Alabama. So I still have the opinion that they could clean things up and end up winning a national title. They could end up winning the SEC. They're one of the only teams in the country that I think could lose to Vandy and still be in that conversation. But they are in that conversation. I just think also, I know this is dirty to say, they didn't lose to a terrible team. It's just no one down here wants to admit it because it sounds a lot better to pretend Vandy is the same Vandy they've always been. This Vandy team was probably a double-digit favorite over any other Vandy team you've seen in your lifetime. But it's okay because that doesn't get as much treadway or headway on the the clickosphere.
Yeah.
So let's just pretend like it's time to burn it down. Let's run DeBoer out of town. Because, by the way, that's the attitude with which that program operated before Nick Saban. That's why it was flying so high before he got there.
A lot of us out here out west, we're a little more laid back, Josh, so we're not as quite passionate as people in the South. You grew up in Georgia. You like to quote Meemaw quite a bit on the show. Did Meemaw have things like this when your team lost?
We'll send a U-Haul to your ass.
Is that how Meemaw used to talk back in the day, just not being familiar with how reactionary people are down there, how normal that is for people like you who grew up around it?
Meemaw believed in letting your assistant go to the gas station for you, letting your assistant do your grocery shopping, because Meemaw knew that you do make the money you make because of the crowd that is at Piggly Wiggly on Tuesday afternoon, which is a grocery store chain down here. However, they will also chew you up and spit you out and not care a second about it because they believe they are the program, not you. And to an extent, they're right. But to an extent, like, I've got folks down here right now yelling at DeBoer that they need to stop running the 4-2-5. And then if you ask them, okay, but are you okay with them running nickel? Oh, I'm fine with nickel. I just don't want them to run 4-2-5. Well, sir, that's the same thing.
Oh, it's fantastic. Well, we went long with you because we're excited you're going to be in Eugene this weekend. So I'll let you get out of here on this one. Where can people find the socials? Because there's going to be great content behind the scenes. And then now you've been to Autzen once. You came out a couple years ago for the UCLA game. Are you prepared for how much different this atmosphere will look than that 2022 UCLA game?
Okay, no, I'm not prepared. I know that. I know I'm not prepared. I heard foliage is in peak season right now. We got low to mid 70s, high clear skies, maybe a cloud or two, beautiful sunset, twilight kickoff. It's going to be wonderful. So no, I'm not prepared. But I do encourage everyone, find me on Instagram at LateKickJosh, because all I do on Saturdays is I just hang out on the sideline, hang out at the facility on Friday, give you as much behind the scenes content as I can. And it's free. Like, selfishly, I think it's the best stuff we do. So that will be fun, even if you don't care a thing about any other word that comes out of my mouth.
Well, and if Oregon wins on a walk-off touchdown, you might see Josh Pate live on Instagram in the dog pile. So that's why you need to
go follow. I don't think he'll be on the dog pile. I think he'll be hugging Lanning.
I told you. Josh Pate, CFB. Go give him a follow on Twitter. He's the best in the business. His college football show is on every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock on YouTube. He will be live in Eugene this weekend. Can't wait to see you this weekend, man. Thanks as always. Enjoy the game, and we'll chat again next Wednesday.
I appreciate it, guys.
There you go. Josh Pate, who's going to be in Autzen this weekend. Little long there. Let's talk about that game because Ryan Day and Chip Kelly have discussed it from their side. We'll play some of that audio. Which coach is under more pressure this weekend? Not in that game, but another Big Ten showdown that's going down. It's a loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fam.